This is Call with Dads, where we dive into the ups, downs, and everything in between when it comes to being a dad. Here, it's all about connecting with a community of dads who are committed to learning and leveling up as fathers. Welcome to Call with Dads. Let's talk.
Yeah.
No, you'll drive.
Yeah, for that, definitely for that, I'll drive.
Yeah.
I'll deal with the 7 to 8 hour drives and the kids. For them, most times they just fall asleep. So, but we like to have our traditions and go back to see family when we get a chance. So, but speaking of traditions, let's dive into this. And you know, it's kind of originally when I mentioned this to you, it was kind of a thought process of when Mr. Pancakes and I started this. I think one of our first episodes was about traditions and all this. And, you know, with the holidays coming, you and I talking about me heading back to Ohio to see my family back there and what so have you, the thought of traditions seemed like it was the right time for it. But, you know, it kept dawning on me, and my wife and I started having a conversation. And I might be throwing this conversation way off of from what you were thinking, but we'll see how it goes. But my wife and I was talking, and I made a joke about, yeah, traditions are so great. My grandparents were married almost all their lives, and by the time they died, they just hated each other. And that's kind of how things used to be. Is traditionally you would get married, and I swear, as far as I can remember, I think my grandpa and my grandma fought with each other more than they acted like they liked each other. Mm-hmm. And even my mom has come out and said that that she remembers growing up, my grandpa and grandma not liking each other. I'm sitting there thinking, you've had two kids. How do you have two kids, dislike each other, stay married? My grandpa literally had a little cot set up to sleep in the barn. And, you know, it's that thought of, that was a tradition, a thing that people used to do, because the thought of divorce was something you didn't do, because traditionally you got married, you stayed married thick and thin. You had the vows, English class homeschooling kind of, you get certain words stuck in your head off. But generally, I mean, I see tradition as a great thing. And I love traditions, like holiday traditions. And every Sunday I make pancakes with my kids, and I'm halfway through and they're already taking the pancakes off the plate and running around and smacking each other with. We're a wild house, so we definitely get a little crazy here. But overall, I mean, where do you come in with traditionals, in the sense of tradition is, it's great, but do you think there's a bad side or what so have you? Or do you think that we should stick to tradition as a whole?
So I guess a couple things are kind of going through my mind while you're talking. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think that my grandparents probably seemed to have a strong dislike for one another as I was growing up. They, and I don't know how much of it was tongue in cheek, as right. It's just like kind of a joke, like, oh, your grandma, you know, or how much of it was legitimate. But one thing that I did notice was that when my grandpa passed away, and I remember seeing my grandma at the funeral, and she was like distraught,
yeah.
You know, and then the same goes for my grandpa on my father's side when he passed away. You know, everyone was kind of like a joke amongst the whole family about how grumpy my grandpa was on my father's side, and how, you know, my grandma was just like, I don't know, it seemed like she kind of just put up with it. But then when he passed away, she was the same way. She was like completely beside herself, and she was like lost for years. You know what I mean? And so I guess it's kind of interesting, because I wonder how much of it, like I said, was tongue in cheek,
right,
or kind of just for show, or how much of it was legitimate. I have no doubt in my mind that my grandparents had a very strong bond with one another, even if their irritation was palpable at times.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know if the same is true for your experience with your grandparents. I mean, did you witness one of them responding to the death of the other? Or,
you know, I was much younger when my grandfather on my dad's side died, my biological dad's side. When mm-hmm. he died, I was younger, and I really didn't see, on my biological father's side, I've never really been close enough to that side of the family that they've let me see really anything. So I didn't really get to witness that. On my mom's side, when my grandpa died, my grandma was upset, this and that. And for a while there, you could tell that she still thought about it. And it was kind of that readjusting to life without him and whatsoever. But the problem was, as time progressed, her mind kind of started drifting away. So she would start not thinking much about that, but more about when she was a little girl. The I forget what it's called, where
Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for her, it was for a bit, she was upset and she cried, but it wasn't like a weeping widow. It was just more, you lost somebody, your life completely changed. And then you deal with the loss for a while, but after that you kind of go on. And I think you also have to take into consideration like the type of people. Like my grandparents, they lived out on a farm. My grandpa worked in a junkyard. They both worked in factories as well. Right. So they're a little more thicker skin, I guess, is.
Same for my family, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, like, I'll admit, I'm not as thick skinned as my grandpa by any means. I mean, he was a grumpy guy when he wanted to be and very friendly to a few select people. But I mean, it's kind of that people don't really show emotions as much back then, or that younger or older generation compared to the newer generation. My generation, because I'm 45 or 46, somewhere around. So 45. Yeah, we're still 2024. So I'm 45. And my generation, we started showing more emotions, things like that. But it wasn't, we're not like the generation now that's out and just everything is woe is me. I got spanked once. My life is horrid. My
PTSD.
Yeah. I mean, I still joke about my mom beating me down and literally not just like, oh, she smacked me. My mom beat me down in front of a police station because I got in trouble with the police. Now, mind you, I deserved it completely, but there's no way I'm sitting there going, man, I couldn't move forward. I just couldn't do this or that. I deserved every hit that my mom gave me as the police looked out. Police and my best friend at the time looking out the window, watching my mom do this.
Probably just laughing the whole time.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the cops had a crush on my mom to boot. So.
Oh, okay.
So, but it was just that whole thing of like the difference between generations. Mm-hmm. Now you see it. And I think as generations change and what so have you, we tend to look at traditions and things like that differently because like my mom, the going back for holidays, being together for traditions for the holidays, to me, it's great and fantastic if I'm able to do it. But because I moved 8 hours away, if the drive is horrible or if I can't get off work or my wife can't get off work, it's like, okay, well, yes, we want to be home. But on the same note, that's not the most important thing to us because we have other holidays, hopefully. And so, I mean, I think as time progresses, traditions change for generations. And my thought, and this is where I go, my thought is that we need to have traditions to keep building and passing things on. But
I agree.
At the same note, I wonder, and I honestly don't know how I think about this. So when I say I wonder, I seriously wonder how strong do we need to hold on to some of these traditions? Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. By any means, I'm not saying let's let them go. Let's just forget them and say, who cares? But do we hold on to them so tight that we're basically drawing blood out of our hands with our grip? Or do we sit there and say, you know, okay, I understand it. This is how it used to be. Like I've told my wife, my mind of marriage is traditionally you get married to one person and that's if we don't work, if anything happened, we got divorced, what's I have you, then I'm not getting remarried. I'll date, but I'm not going to get remarried. And I've made that perfectly clear that that is my intention from the very beginning, because I have that traditional mindset of that. Now, I know some people will sit there and say, and I don't judge people for their mindset on how they want to do it. If you find somebody you want to marry, good for you, go for it. I think one of the people that I really follow and like, Dennis Prager, talks about how he's been married, divorced, and remarried, and his second marriage is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So each person has own life to live. Don't use my thought process as your go-to all the time. But go ahead.
So the other thing that I thought when you were first talking about traditions too is that in the fire service, they have a joke that they make oftentimes where they say, you know, the fire service is 200 years of tradition unimpeded by progress. and I've always thought, well, one, that's hilarious, but two, I think it's enlightening because it sheds light on kind of how people tend to view tradition, right? People view tradition as, well, even when we use it linguistically, when we say, well, traditionally, this is what's done. All we're really saying is that this is how it's always been.
Right.
We're not necessarily saying that there's any reason behind why it's always been done this way. This is just traditionally the way it's been done. And so that's like, I used to make the claim that ideologically I was a traditionalist. And then the more that I kind of looked into the idea or explored the idea of traditionalism, it seems to me that a lot of it is based in religion and in just common practice over a long period of time. And that doesn't necessarily reflect how I feel. I think I'm actually more ideologically a classical conservatist, so that these traditions, when they're based in reason and when their continued participation can be justified, then I think that it makes sense to keep them around, right?
Right.
So like the idea of being married to one woman, the idea of, you know, a nuclear family, the idea of even these holidays, like there's a purpose behind why we bring the family together on these holidays. It's an opportunity for kind of everyone to come back together and reconnect.
Right.
And there's a lot of benefits to those.
Yeah.
And I don't think that really needs to be clarified. Like, it's just obvious some of the benefits to those things, you know. I think on the other hand, too, it's important, like me being kind of the leader in my household, and I kind of almost see myself as like the, because although there was some family cohesiveness in like the previous generations inside my family, like we used to have family dinners and stuff together. But since my grandma passed away, that's kind of devolved entirely, and, which is sad. And so I kind of almost see myself as like the pioneer of a new generation, right? Of my posterity, if you will. And so I've been kind of trying to enact like new traditions in a way in my family and connect with them, like strong emotional connections for my children. So obviously the repetition, you know, the reason behind why, and making them fun and attaching strong emotional connections, because that kind of harkens in my mind back to when I was a child and having like family Christmas and, you know, all the positive memories associated with it, right? Having the opportunity to play with all my cousins, be around all the family that I never got to see, and eat all the really great food that my grandma would cook. And, you know, there's just something like almost romanticized about that tradition. And so I'm kind of trying to create those for my family going forward in a way. So I don't know, I guess to kind of sum up the thought, like, I think tradition is important, but I think that also there comes a time and a place when a particular tradition no longer has a valid reason to, you know, continue participating in it. It's kind of like, have you ever heard the idea of zero-based budgeting, right? So like, you know, at the beginning of the month, everything starts back at zero and every new expense has to be re-justified. It's kind of what, it's kind of, not to get into politics, but it's kind of the philosophy behind the Department of Governmental Efficiency under Elon, right? This is kind of like his base philosophy, is that all these expenses have to be re-justified. Well, in the book, The Minimalist, by Greg McKeown, he takes this idea and translates it into expenditures of time and says like, okay, so, you know, every time we have a meeting every Monday. Okay, why? This meeting every Monday, it has to be justified again every Monday. Otherwise, we're not doing it, you know? And it's, I feel the same way about tradition. Like, there's these great traditions that have been around for a long time, but there comes a point where they have to justify their own existence. And if they don't, then we have to discard it, you know? Right. We have to be willing to discard it. Yeah.
All right. And that makes sense. I mean, it's the whole thing of, if it doesn't make sense anymore, and again, I think everyone needs to figure out their own route. And my theory is we're here to kind of give guidance on our opinion and use it, take it, whatever you can. But the whole concept to me, from what you were talking about, makes a lot of sense. And if we're not, if we're not moving forward with our traditions in the sense of making them work for our family and keep building our family the way we want them, then the tradition really is not what it's meant for to begin with. Because, and I think Mr. Pancakes, when the three of us talked last time, there was a comment, and I think it was the three of us that talked about it, where there was a comment about how sometimes we just need to start new things to be able to be better. I think at the time we were talking about being better fathers, better husbands, and what so have you. And I think there was a comment, and forgive me, but we have to start new things at times to be able to advance. Kind of like I'm always trying to learn, and I've lived by the motto of be better so they can be better. I tell my son every day of homeschooling, he gets upset, I get upset, and I'm like, I want you to do better. And he, mind you, he's 6 years old, and he goes, why? I'm like, because I want you to be better than me. I'm like, he goes, and we badmouth public school all the time. And it's kind of the, like I try to explain to him, if he was in public school, he would be doing first grade work. Homeschooling, he's doing third grade science. The only first grade work he's doing is his math. And I've made this joke, I don't know how many times, but just we joke about how he's a bad Asian because he's bad at math. Well, my wife is 100% Chinese, an accountant. I mean, now don't get me wrong. I am extremely grateful for having married a Chinese accountant. I'm not always happy when I'm sitting there going, you know, I think we should do this. Well, no, our budget's not here. Well, we can manage. No, it's not there. Well, no, I'm sitting there going, ugh. But
look, Eric, these are the numbers. Yeah. These are the numbers. They don't.
Well, look at it. Like, I design, I create, I think, I do these things. That's what my world's around. Her world is, and again, if it wasn't for the two of us being together, neither of us would be where. But financially, she's built us up because she understands the numbers. Because in China, money, numbers, and all that are huge. The areas, like, they have some people that are very good about technology, but the I think a lot of the Asian community is very focused with starting off being very good at math. Math, and then I think the handwriting is also important as well, but I don't know if that's still a thing. But the fact is math is very important in the Asian communities because, you know, it's if you don't know how to figure out the math, then somebody can easily take advantage of you.
Sure.
So, and that's kind of a, I guess, traditional Asian thing, but it's the whole thing of we have to do what we can to be better. And like, my son, and as soon as my daughter gets to the point of being homeschooled, my kids will be the first generation in my family to be homeschooled. I'm hoping that continues on because I see if that tradition forms and builds and grows, that it's going to be them getting better, being better than everybody else. As people can hate me or whatever for saying that, but I want my kids to be better than the standard people out there. And giving them that time, giving them my effort and my money and what so have you to do that, and having them carry that tradition on will allow them to advance, maybe build a business, maybe figure out what can be done, and then give that to their kids as well so that they can be better families in the ways they see it fit. And I'll be able to teach my grandkids, if I'm still around at that time, the things that I believe, the traditions I believe, and then my kids can take that information and use it to say, okay, grandpa's nuts a lot of times, so let's take this with a grain of salt, let's use this. Because I'll admit, I do have wild ideas. Look at it. I think we were talking a little bit before we started recording about HomeSir, the platform for homeschooling that I'm creating, where people can go on and find classes in person, self-paced, or even live online courses. That whole thing is meant to give people the freedom of learning, right? Being able to carry that homeschooling tradition on and start it as well. Now, I do all that so they can be able to either inherit it or have the more opportunities to find the courses and find things that they want so that they can find what, like, literally kind of part of the reason I did it was because I wanted to start getting more better classes for my son. And when my daughter comes to homeschooling for her, because my son wants nature class. Mm-hmm. Well, in the city, you only have a few nature people that you can go to. And literally when my son started at 4 with nature classes, he took over teaching the class because he knew more than the teachers. So, I mean, and I know that's a long ramble on my part, but just the thought of starting that new tradition, because traditionally my whole family has sent all of us to public school, and that tradition I felt needed to be broken, especially in today's world.
Mm-hmm.
The schools are not performing to the quality. There's a lot of things that I'm not going to get into because I could just rant.
That's a good example. Yeah. Public schools is a good example.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you look at it, it started off with a good idea. Then the government involved.
It's necessary in some situations. It's necessary. Yeah, I understand.
Well, I think if public schools stuck to where the government stayed out of it,
mm-hmm.
and the local community, because right now the federal government, the state government, all put their hands in it and all try to do something. If each community didn't have to go by the regulations of the federal government. And I don't care, Republican, Democrat, whoever's in there, you're going to have people disliking what that group is trying to push for the education. And that's what I think a lot of public schools have become, is more of a whose agenda can we. Now, mind you, to me, I know my theory is let's just teach what needs to be taught, as in English, math. Let's not teach math is racist, English is racist.
Sure.
The air is racist.
Well, it's funny. Real quick aside, it's kind of funny. So in my state, there's a big debate going to public schools because there's a program that wants to allow parents to pull their children out of school part of the day to attend religious classes. And I'm perfectly for parental autonomy. And I think that you should have the right to choose how your child was educated. So I don't have a problem with it. And
right.
There's a lot of pushback on it. And the one guy was like, well, they need to focus, as was like a Facebook back and forth. And one individual was like, well, they need to focus more on problems like this and less on the use of pronouns in schools. Like trying to say that the state needs to, you know, like prevent this organization from allowing parents to take their kids out of school during the daytime. They need to focus efforts on preventing this organization to do that, as opposed to, you know, focusing on regulating the use of pronouns in schools. Somebody else who agreed with him responded and was like, well, this is what happens when the government gets involved in schools. And somebody was like, oh, so you're advocating for the abolishment of the Department of Education? And she's like, oh, no. And I'm like, okay. This is like the circular logic. Oh, it's like she came full circle to a conservative idea without accidentally, you know?
Yeah. Which I love when that happens. And
yeah,
I mean, for anyone that's listened long enough is well aware of where my stance is. And I try not to push my stance on it. But yeah, it's great to see when people do that, because, you know, for me, the smaller the government, the better we. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's where I stand. But the Department of Education, I think, has done horrible things over the years for us in the public schools and all that. And, you know, it's, if you want to bring back the tradition of that tradition, you need to improve. Going back to the thought, I guess, is how I can look at it, is public schools used to be the traditional go-to source for education.
Mm-hmm.
When my mom went, you had, and a side note before I go into my tangent, the issue you're talking about, I know where my mom lives, she's part of a group called LifeWise. And
okay.
They go into the public schools and allow the kids to go out for one or two class periods to do church stuff, to learn about.
See, that's probably the order.
It might be, because LifeWise does a fantastic job. And my mom's been working with them for a while now. She sits on one of their boards. And yeah, I've heard a bit of it. And it's funny that it got me thinking, because when public schools started, if you want to go way back to traditional times, public schools started with the community would hire one teacher to teach the entire community. Mm-hmm. And at that time, you figure communities were what, maybe 20, 30, maybe 50 families. You know, it wasn't like it was a sprawling thing. Well, you'd walk into the school, there'd be a cross, there would be a Bible as one of the things, because Bibles were one of the most printed books throughout history. Mm-hmm. So they were also the easiest books to get. So you take the Bible and you'd read the Bible to learn how to read. Mm-hmm. And like, I think, what was it? There's governments and other organizations that were against the printing press, because when they started printing the Bible. And I think even the church, the old church, was really against the printing press, because they said, if people learned to read, if the common person learned to read, they would learn to think. And if they learned to think, they wouldn't need us anymore. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that's partly true, because traditionally you'd go, and this is going back, but you would go to the church, and the church and the government that was part of that together. And sorry, cat's jumping up, but you would have them tell you what to believe, you know, and you didn't know if that person was telling you what's in the Bible, telling you whatever they wanted you to think.
Right.
I mean, so then the printing press, that tradition changed, and I am going to kill this cat. So, but the fact is that that tradition changed. Then
not actually going to kill the cat.
No, I've had cats for as long as I can remember at this point. And I'd say this cat here, which is the baby cat, has literally cost, she was a free cat that cost me more money than others. So trust me, for a free cat, she's too expensive to kill. But yeah, you look at it. So that tradition broke and when people started learning, right? Then people started learning the Bible and then as cities grew, what so have you, they started breaking that apart. And then suddenly time passed. I'm skipping a lot of stuff now, where they took it out where you're not even allowed to pray in school. Mm-hmm. And because where the Pledge of Allegiance and morning prayer was traditional in school, I think when I went to school, you were allowed a moment of silence or prayer. And then we stood up, did the Pledge of Allegiance. And I think that's got outlawed or taken out when I was in middle school. So that tradition came to an end. Now, if you think that's good or bad or what so have you, that's all your opinion. But traditions change, and I'm all for changing for the better. But then you look at, as time progresses, you no longer have people, you're now teaching kids that America, their own country, that they're supposed to care for, love, and want to see do better.
Yeah.
Are wanting to see America be dismantled and hold on. See, cat, for all those watching. But yeah, I mean, you have all that, and then it tore apart. And now look at where we're at now with taking away those traditions.
Well, I think you're talking kind of like about anti-nationalism, right? Which is like the opposite of nationalism. That's right. A huge problem. Either end of the spectrum is problematic. When it comes to religion in schools, I firmly believe that if we're going to have a public school system, then we need to have the original, you know, statement or whatever dictum is separation of church and state. I mean, there's a lot of conflict about that idea, but I think the intention of that idea is separation of state and ideology, which I think is extremely important. And we see that nowadays with the advent of a lot of like modern gender theory and all the stuff, these ideologies are being injected into our school system.
Right.
And I think that if we're going to have a sound public school that is intended to disseminate education to the masses, then it needs to be separated from any specific ideology, at least insofar as that ideology is taught as fact. Right. We can discuss these ideologies with the understanding that there are differing opinions. But when we teach that this is the only option, it becomes a problem. So I guess having the option to pray in school shouldn't be a problem. Having the option to leave and go take Christian classes shouldn't be a problem. But teaching Christianity as fact in schools, I think, is problematic, in the same way that teaching things like modern day gender theory in schools is problematic as well.
I agree with you there.
Kind of like of the same ilk. But it seems like we're talking a lot about like this idea of tradition, and it's almost like a double-edged sword, right? You've got some traditions, like you talked about these ideas of helping to improve your family, the idea that I talked about of like establishing new traditions for my family, or the idea of marrying one woman, you know, remaining with that woman, cultivating a nice family unity. All these ideas are one type of, and it's like the foundational framework, right?
Right.
They're like the building blocks of good character, if you will. And then on the other hand, there's these traditions that are almost like, they're like useless vestiges of a previous time, right? And those types of traditions, I think, are harmful. So tradition is a double-edged sword. You've got these some traditions that are necessary and important building blocks of good character. And then you have some traditions that are not just a waste of time, but can actually be, they can actually be detrimental to the foundation of, to the entire foundation as a whole, right?
Right.
They're like cracked bricks in the foundation. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And I think, like I said earlier, when I mentioned my real question that boils down to this is how tightly do we hold on to the traditions? Because as just in our short conversation already, we've explored the fact of, like you said, some traditions, they build, they improve, they bond, they make us good families. Other traditions, they kind of tear us apart. They make things harder for us to be able to move forward with. And if we hold on to the stringent, well, and I'm going to generalize this, but if every holiday has to have turkey, ham, cranberries, sweet potatoes, and that's it, then when somebody new, like say, longest time my mom made all the holiday dinners, right? Then we went back, and after I got married, my wife made the this sweet and sour chicken for Thanksgiving. And the fact is now it's almost a traditional thing that the family expects or hopes that my wife's going to make her sweet and sour chicken for the holidays. So it's on the thing. They just take it. They're happy, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, it boils down to she breads it, does all this stuff, fries it up, and then coats it. Right. And if we held on to tradition so tight, my mom could have said, no, don't worry about it. I'll cook everything, blah, blah, blah. No one would have had it. We could have had it for dinner another night, but now everyone's sitting there going, okay, well, let's have the sweet and sour chicken as well as, which you never think, oh, sweet and sour chicken, Thanksgiving and Christmas, definitely a dish for that. Mm-hmm. You know, but like I said, for me, like the marriage thing, personally for me, marry once and be done and over with it after that. If it works out, whatever, that's where I stand. Again, I'm not saying that if you get divorced, never remarry. There's good stories of it, but my point of view, we all have our own traditions. And there's some people that really hold on to those traditions so strongly that any other variation of it. And like, don't get me wrong. I absolutely agree that ideology should not be put into the public schools. And I think that's a huge part of what pushed it down. And what a lot of people, when they think of the separation of church and state, it was, I think, Jefferson, and I forget if it was him, but I think it was Jefferson that wrote that the government should have nothing to do with the church, that there should be a separation of church and state so the government cannot affect the church. He was not saying that you should not be carrying your religious views into doing so, because if you have a religious view, if it's your, and I consider people with ideology as that being their religious view, you're going to carry that view into everything. I carry my Christian views into what I do. I see people with their views that they hold stronger than some people that claim to be religious do, and they carry that through everything they do. But I think that we need to build that happy medium where we take our views. We don't hold on to things that we see are not working just for the sake of, this is what we always did. Let's not change it.
I agree with you. It's interesting too, because it almost like those two sides of tradition, you know, create huge divisions sometimes amongst family. And I mean, if the whole point of a tradition is to help cultivate family unity. You know, why would you allow it to divide the family? Like, right, you talked about, I mean, you know, that was an example, like a singular example, but you could think about it, you know, as an analogy too of something greater. So if there's a tradition that's so tightly held by older generations of the family, and it's held without reason, right? It's held with the point of view that we do it this way because we've always done it this way. Mm-hmm. And they're unwavering despite, right, you know, being faced with either something new, a new possibility, or even sometimes being faced with reason. You know, they hold so tightly to it. It creates divisions between the generations. And ultimately, I think that's contradictory to the core purpose of a tradition. Right.
Yeah. I mean, so let me ask this. What kind of, for you personally, what kind of traditions do you tend to find yourself following? And have you found any that you kind of sit there and go, you know, we used to do it this way, but it's no longer beneficial, or it's no longer what we do, just for example purpose?
Well, I've always been pretty good at like discarding tradition, you know, if they're not useful. I mean, I think the fire service is a good example. There's a lot of things, you know, it's like, well, we're just going to do it this way because we've always done it. It's like, well, it doesn't make sense to do it that way anymore.
Right.
You know, like when it comes to like fire ground tactics, there's some things that are just outright dangerous that have been proven to be ineffective, and yet people will continue to do them that way, you know, depending on the department. But with my family, we've kind of like established new traditions. Like, we have brunch every Sunday. That's kind of like an unwavering tradition that we do. We have one family night a week. It doesn't have to necessarily fall on a particular day, but we have one night where everything is just shut out. It's just family time, playing games. We're watching movies. We're just hanging out. You know, we're cooking all of our meals together in the kitchen. We're cleaning up together, you know, cleaning up all the kitchen together when it's done. I guess, I don't know. I can't think of anything specific, because I didn't really come from a super religious family, to be honest with you.
All right.
So I think a lot of the traditions that my family created were just, they were not to a point to where they were like unwavering traditions. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's not like my grandma was like, well, you know, every Christmas we're having Christmas dinner at my house, and that's just the way it is.
Right.
Or I don't know, it's just a silly example, but you know, something
that.
Yeah. And then, you know, you get, you know, you have marriages and other families are kind of, you know, melding together. And then you've got some other grandma that's like, oh, well, you know, I always have Christmas at my house on Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, it's like even with my wife and my mother-in-law, we've kind of like been able to kind of work the two things together. So they both would have Christmas dinner at their house on Christmas Eve. And since then we've kind of shifted. So now we go to my mother's house on Christmas morning. After we open all my kids open all their presents and stuff, we'll go to their house on Christmas morning and have a brunch at their house. And then Christmas Eve we spend with my mother-in-law. So it's just been kind of like people were not entirely inflexible, right? They were able to kind of shift and mold and make the traditions work. So I guess I've been fortunate.
Right.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. And yeah, I mean, like, I've seen where like my family is similar, where, well, we have grown up with a religious background, but I mean, the fact of is, I went through quite a few years of not considering myself religious, I guess is a good way of putting it. I kind of stepped away from it and came back to it. But, you know, the one thing I found is that if my family, like my mom right now, if she was so stuck about tradition, because it used to be we'd have Christmas at my grandma's house when I was, and then once my brother and I got to a certain age, we started dating. And then, of course, at 16, when I was 16, I would go to the girlfriend's house. The girl would come over to my house. It was like a whole thing. You'd have the holidays, this and that. And so we started having the Christmas breakfast and presents at my mom's house, then dinner at my grandma's. And my grandma would come over. Then we would just shift over. And
sure,
it eventually became just dinner at my mom's house. And we would all still come over, have like breakfast, eggs, bacon, whatever. Nothing real major, because you had the big dinner cooking.
Sure.
But at the same note, over time, our traditions and our rituals kind of change.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm thinking that there's a difference between traditions and the rituals that attach to them. So traditionally, my family gets together for the holiday. Ritually, we started off at my grandma's and then ended up at my mom, eventually went to my mom's. And as time progresses, and I hope, God help me, that this doesn't happen for quite a few years. But when my mom passes, then it's going to be at my house. And there's a good chance my brother and I, being so far apart, that we're not going to be meeting up for the holidays. And, you know, that's sad to say, but it's a likelihood of what it is. Mm-hmm. Because once the parents go away, that connection kind of goes away as well. Mind you, it would be nice if we still did, but an 8-hour drive isn't really likely to happen. Where mm-hmm. I'll be traditionally still having my kids and my family get together, but ritually, the ritual changed to being at my house, where mm-hmm. we cook a dinner, and there's a good chance that the American Christmas dinner is going to become very much Chinese, because, but it's that whole thing of things will change. And mm-hmm. And it's just coming into my head that I think a lot of people are getting traditions in the rituals that are in the tradition. Because, like, let's look at public school. Traditionally was meant to teach and grow, help the community be better. That was the tradition of public schools, right? Ritually, they used the Bible to help teach. So that ritual changed. They used different learning, different things like that. Eventually, the ritual morphed so much that you no longer focused on teaching to be better, but teaching to have the kids do something. Have them either, I think, if you look at it, when the Department of Education was formed, it was formed more to taking the schools and having people learn how to be factory workers, to be, I say,
right,
things like that. And the follow, you had those rare people that would learn to become management. And then college traditionally was to teach a specialty. And now college, their tradition to teach is still there, but the ritual of a specialty is less and less, because there's people that, like, I have a bachelor's degree in business, right? I'm a food service designer. I mean, I've taken some architectural classes, but I'm not a architect or a trained architect or a trained designer. I'm a trained business guy. But because my degree was so wide range, you know, I learned business, I learned all this, and I realized that I understood business and I can deal with the workings of business, but I also realized that that degree, I could be sales, I could be a manager, I could be so many sure. different things, that you don't have a specialty in that sense, right? So the ritual of what's built into the traditions, I'm realizing in my mind, at least, that the value of a tradition for its basis of the purpose, educating, bringing the family together, using holiday dinners to bring the family together is great. But if you're so focused on the rituals that are involved in it, then I think that might be where the problems are starting to come to, so that families start getting pushed apart because the rituals inside the tradition are not, people aren't being flexible. So
I think that's a good distinction. Yeah, I think that's a smart distinction. Yeah, the tradition, like you said, has some core intention behind it, right? To educate, to create family unity, to, you know, ensure future family success through monogamy, whatever it might be, with like the marriage institution.
Right.
So if the tradition is that, you know, one man, one woman get married and have a nuclear family, and there's reasons behind that, but the ritual is that, you know, you get together and you have you have a marriage and you bring all the family together and it's elaborate, and that could be harmful, right? I mean, if you've got a young, well, statistically we know that young couples that spend, you know, $50,000 plus on their marriage are significantly less likely to stay together. So, right. You know, the ritual is that, right, we have this big wedding,
yeah. But
maybe that's not useful, right? The point of the tradition is to ensure the longevity of the family, right?
Yes.
But the ritual seems to be contradictory to that. And that's a really good example, right? So the tradition is that, you know, we come together once a week, me and my family, and we spend the day together, just kind of focusing on each other and fostering relationships. The ritual just happens to be brunch.
Right.
You know? Yeah. But if the ritual were to change, say schedules were to change, right, as we get older, my kids, you know, grow up and we can't do Sunday morning anymore, or you know, Sunday afternoon anymore, or something, right? And we end up doing Thursday night. At the end of the day, who cares? You know,
right?
It changes nothing. You know, as long as the intent of the tradition still remains intact. I think that's smart. I think you're right. There's definitely a distinction there.
And yeah. I said it actually just came to me. That's why I love these conversations, is because even as we're trying to help other, we learn as we go. And
right.
You know, I think at this point, my standing is that we should hold on to our traditional values, but not really be so focused on the rituals that are involved in it.
Right.
So,
and
yeah.
not to the detriment of the original intent.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's, yeah. I mean, because, yeah, it's interesting to me that we tend to push so much. And this is where, like, for me, a lot of it is people are so focused on the usage of word. And I've gotten into being very much anal about the people that say, well, I want to be my kid's friend, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, I'm like, okay, well, do you want to be your kid's friend, or do you want to be with your kid throughout life? Mm-hmm. Because one, I've had a lot of friends in my life, right? And they've come, they've gone. At this point, my best friend that I've known since I was, probably my knee height, I haven't seen and talked to him for like a year.
Right.
I'll probably text him saying, hey, I'm flying in. I'm going to be here these days. If you can make it, swing by and we'll have a beer or have a glass of wine or whatever. If he makes it, fantastic. If not, if I see him over Christmas or the following year, we'll still be friends, still talk. But it's not like I see him and I connect with him that often.
Right.
I hate to say it. There's, I don't know if you ever saw the show Last Man Standing with Tim Allen.
Yeah.
there was an episode, and this, I don't know why, this stuck with me for quite some time since I've heard him say it, is that he goes, my best friend that I've had since elementary school, he's in Michigan still, and I think he's still alive. I haven't talked to him in so many years, and he's still my best friend.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, maybe I should call him to see if he's still alive. And I mean, it's that thought of,
yeah,
him and I, my best friend and I will always be best friends, but times have changed. And, but here's the thing, is like, my mom and I, we're still friends, in the sense that I can talk to her. I trust her to the point, and her and I will always be around each other. Just like I'm trying to build a thing with my family, with my kids, that they know I'm not their friend. I'm not here to make them happy. I'm here to make them better than me. I'm here to make sure that they have a good life, at least the best I can. And throughout their life, I will always be here for them. But I want them to be aware that we need to be more than friends.
Mm-hmm.
Friends are temporary. Friends can come and go. Friends have no real commitment. Family, on the other hand, does. In the tradition of family, you're not always going to love your family. Well, let me rephrase that. You're not always going to like your family. You may love them. Trust me, there's a lot of times that I love my wife. I might not like her at that time, but I still love her. You know, you have an argument, this and that. You might sit there and go, ah, but after you get over that initial emotional shock, emotional whatever, the fact of we have our marriage and the tradition that her and I built with our marriage, it's kind of that whole difference. And I think using the words, my rant on that word phrasing of people saying that, is that people are tying the rituals that are involved in traditions and say, well, it's tradition, we do this. Well, it's the ritual that it's ritual that you do this. And I think that in our conversation, it's kind of really come out in my head that the ritual is what people focus more on now than the tradition itself.
Yeah.
And we've started interchanging this is our ritual for this tradition versus, well, this is the tradition. This is, we do this, 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 and this. This is the tradition. Instead of, it's tradition, we get together. Okay, well, ritually, when we get together, we'll do this, this, and this. Okay, well, ritually, we used to play games, but as we got older, no one really wants to stay up till midnight playing games. So,
sure.
I mean, things change.
Well, it's It seems like that even parallels what we were talking about earlier, like our usage of the term traditional, right? We say, well, traditionally, this is what we've done. What we're really saying is, this is what we've always done.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
And I guess, yeah, it might be more reasonable to say, well, ritually, we don't have to change the language, obviously, but as long as they have the understanding that there's two definitions to the word tradition, right?
Right.
There's the reason-based, unwavering tradition that has an intent, and then there are the rituals associated with it, which are fluid, right? They may change from year to year. There may be new rituals formed, and old rituals may go away, but at the end of the day, the intent-based, reason-based tradition is what's relevant.
All right. Yeah, I think. Yeah, so at least as far as I'm seeing it, and I think that the fact of traditions still have their value. And like you said, it's we have to be able to, even if we don't use different words, even if obviously this episode's not going to make people start going, well, I'm going to say ritually we do this.
Well, ritually we do that. People would be like, what are you talking about?
what kind of rituals? Well, I mean, in all truth, most times when you hear somebody say, ritually we do this, you're sitting there going, what?
Think of like a cult.
Yeah. What kind of cult are you part of?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But you're right. The delineation in the two understandings is extremely valuable. Right. Yeah.
And I think that as fathers, as husbands, as adults in general, we have to be willing to take the steps to not hold on to the traditionally done things, the rituals, and hold on to the traditions. Let's do the traditions that bring our family. Let's hold on to the traditions that help build us up and change the actions, the tradition. Mm-hmm. The traditional actions, the rituals, the whatever you wording you want to use. I think if we can get more people to do that and at least have that kind of mindset, use whatever words you want, but the mindset of step away from the action, holding on to the action of it so much and more on the values that come with it.
Yeah.
I think that would change. I think that would probably change a lot of things in the world in the sense of what kind of parents we are, what kind of husbands and people we are, husbands, wife, whatever, as a whole, because people are so focused on the actions and not the values at this point.
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
But let's do this. Instead of going on more of a large tangent, I think we've kind of, gone to this
one. Came to a good conclusion.
I think so. Yeah. I think this is a good time to kind of end this where it is so that, because we're at a good point. I don't think we can dig this any deeper to get to the core of stuff, but so Tom, it's good to have you as part of the actual Call with Dads team, to have you as a host and no longer as a guest. So
glad to be on it. The conversations are always great.
Yeah. And you and I are definitely going to have a whole lot more, as well as you're going to be helping me with talking to the other guest. We have, an amazing guest that I'm actually excited to talk with. I don't want to give away the name yet, because if something changes,
sure.
I'd say that I've had guests that kind of fell through at the last minute and rescheduling's hard. But the fact is this conversation, I think you're going to be fantastic with him. And the fact of some of our other guests, you're going to bring a whole new aspect to talking with them. That
thanks.
So
I'm excited.
So am I. And when Mr. Pancakes gets back from his hiatus, the three of us having weird conversations and just having some, I can only imagine the routes that we're going to go here. So, so with that, let's do this. Where do you want people to find you? I know that I have a page set up on you for you on Call with Dads, where people can find you there, read about you a little bit. I know that you're on X. Where do you want people to find you, contact you? How do they do
X,
so?
X is absolutely the primary place to go. So at Earn Her Respect is my X page. You can DM me there. There's a link to jump on a free 30-minute call if you're interested in coaching or anything like that. And that's where you'll receive any update on any of the other things I've got coming up. So that's the best place to find me for sure.
Sounds perfect. And of course, you can find those links in the show notes, along with the link that has his bios, where the link for his X account is. Call with Dads. where really is where you're going to find everything I do. I've absolutely admit I've been horrible about it because I've been focused on HomeSir, which like I said, I'm just trying to get one last thing nailed out so that this can be the service that homeschooler families need. And I'm expecting it to be amazing for everybody once it's up and going. With that being said, callwithdads.com. If you're at the podcast, you should be able to figure out how to spell call with dads. At a.com. There we go. We're on YouTube. We're on Rumble. We're on every audio service that you can think of. And if you don't find us there, go to callwithdads.com and send me a message telling me where you can't find me. And I will put us there for you to be able to listen, because I want everybody to find our voice so that we can help as many people as. With that being said, thank everybody for coming, and we'll talk to you later.